BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nathan Filer, and I'm a dad. I'm other things too. Occasionally, I'm a writer and a mental health academic, but I'm always a dad. A year or so ago, I was pottering around my kitchen with Radio 4 playing in the background, maybe much as you are now. I can't remember what the programme was, only that an expert was saying how parents and guardians should start talking to their children about pornography from when they're around 9 years of age, before they discover it for themselves. My stomach lurched. 9. My daughter was 9, her younger brother 7. I was part of the last generation to have reached adolescence without the internet. Porn, when I first discovered it, was that well-thumbed glossy magazine that a mate's older brother had stashed away, furtively shared between friends with something approaching reverence. Today, pornography sites are ranked among the most popular on the internet, attracting more visitors than Amazon, Netflix or TikTok. Billions of monthly views. And the content has changed dramatically too. I think that's worth having some conversations about, which is precisely what I plan to do. Over 3 one-to-ones, I'm speaking with 3 clever people about porn. What it means, how we live with it, and how we can talk to our children about it. And one of those clever people is with me right now and is none other than stand-up comedian, actor, presenter and writer. I don't know how you do it all. Sarah Pascoe.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much.
I feel like I have to qualify my fact that I'm not an expert about pornography. I became very interested in it because I was so ignorant in my late 30s of something, as you say, that has billions of views and some people spend a large amount of their time doing. And I was, again, you know, I'm 42, the last of the people who did their entire adolescence without the internet and had managed to be naive. Yeah. You know, it was put on at a couple of parties I was at when I got embarrassed and left the room.
But your most recent work of nonfiction is Sex, Power, Money, which considers transactional sex and male sexuality. And you devote a lot of space in that book to thinking about pornography. So why is this an important conversation for you?
When I pitched it, it was a very classic feminist, and this is not all feminists, but a classic feminist view, that men liked porn and porn was bad. And that was a book I was planning to write until I started researching it and realised it was a huge amount more complicated than that. And my views were very reductive and were based on having spoken very little to people about porn, having watched none and read no studies about the effects of porn, but taking feminism that I had imbibed to be literal.
One of the things I love about your book is it takes such a long view. You alert us to the fact that the very earliest known cave artwork, I think, is it the Abri Castanet engravings, stretching back some 37,000 years, depict female genitalia. Now, whether that constitutes porn presumably depends on whether it was intended to arouse. I mean, I'll be honest, I did look it up after reading about it in your book.
Yeah.
It did nothing for me, Sarah. It did.
But also, here's the wonderful thing about subjectivity. One person's art is someone else's porn. So that, you know, you could do a cave engraving of some genitals and go, that's my fertility symbol. I love it. It's beautiful. It's the human body reflected. I've made it. And someone else comes in and goes, oh, a lot we've done on the wall, and suddenly it's someone's pornography.
Well, I think today, by almost any definition of porn, it's rife. It's widely acknowledged, I think, that this has been driven by the so-called tube sites, those sites that work a bit like YouTube. Pornhub and Xvideos are two of the main players, between them attracting around 6 billion monthly views. I wonder if this was inevitable. Is pornography somehow innate to us as a species, even if the specific things depicted change?
Visual arousal for sighted people is like the fact that music makes your foot tap along. That's hardwired. And I know, please don't write in if you're someone who doesn't get visually aroused. There are always anomalies. That's the point of evolution, isn't it? That we have outliers and people who are special and different. But visual arousal seems to be hardwired in humanity, which is fascinating, which means that, yes, we used to have to draw it ourselves. And then it became more and more sophisticated. And then with every technology, someone works out how to use it to be sexy.
With those tube sites like Pornhub and Xvideos, I think they're not just sort of meeting a demand, are they? They seem to be creating that demand as well.
The novelty side, I think, is hardwired. I think what's hardwired seems to be that once someone has ejaculated or to something, they want something different next time. Okay. They don't have like the fondness for, I had my first ever masturbate to this lady and this man, and every Sunday, you know, after we've had breakfast,
it's a tradition. Yeah,
they never age. I know it word for word, but still, it's the exact opposite with sexuality. It seems to be that novelty, and this is where I really had to get my head around things, but I guess things that were outside of someone's sexual comfort zone seemed to be arousing. And that's what the tube sites, in a very similar way to YouTube, you liked this, what about this awful thing? So they understand your sexuality so well that they can then bombard it.
Let's talk about some of the stuff people can find on those sites.
Yeah.
In Sex, Power, Money, you write about a petition that circulated a few years ago, and it listed some titles of videos on one of the main tube sites.
Yeah.
And those titles include, I'm slightly embarrassed to read them, but I am going to read
them.
They're horrible. Unwanted, painful, anal. I stress again, unwanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Extreme, brutal gagging. And how to sexually harass your secretary properly. I have no interest, Sarah, in kink shaming.
No.
But it does seem that the landscape of what constitutes mainstream pornography has changed since I was a teenager and finding those sort of glossy magazines. I'm curious to know, like, does this represent a problem for you? Or do you think it represents a problem more broadly?
I think calling it a problem is too simplified and helps no one.
Okay.
I don't think it helps people who are addicted to pornography. I don't think it helps people who get assaulted. I don't think it helps children who will be shown stuff that's awful, because that's what children do. So when you say to me, are those titles problematic to me? The idea of someone having acts performed upon them they don't want is deeply problematic. I think most people who consume porn assume that it is a game like acting where for payment people pretend things. And I'm not saying that is true 100% of the time, but it means that they can remain a good person who sometimes gets sexual pleasure from watching acting, watching sexual acting. So that's, I think the majority of human beings, that's what's happening. Are there also people who are only aroused by hurting their partners? Yes, there are. And that existed before pornography, and it existed before tube sites. And I don't know enough about current studies and evidence, but I know that every time they've tried to prove a correlation between watching that kind of pornography and committing those kind of acts, they don't have the hard evidence yet. Really horrible people tend to watch really horrible porn, but there are other people who watch a lot of horrible porn who do nothing. If I got to wave my magic wand on porn in general, I would make it that people had to pay.
If people have got to pay for it, there's an element of what, accountability in that process?
Accountability, them looking at themselves as a consumer, as an ethical consumer, and the choices that they make and the ramifications of those choices. But then also, when people have runaway successes, they are also well remunerated. I mean, these are people, sex workers and people who make pornography are already treated terribly financially. They're treated terribly in society in general.
The billions of people, though, are visiting porn at the moment through these tube sites where they're not paying. I noted in your book when you referred to the petition I talked about that had those particularly kind of titles that so comprehensively conflate sex with sexual violence, with diminishment, with punishment. You weren't seeing those kind of titles.
No, the worst I saw, it was definitely an infringement of power, and it was a customs officer who'd taken somebody who was an illegal immigrant into a room, and it ended up in sex. But the sex itself was very, you know, enjoyed, performatively enjoyed.
Okay.
So it wasn't an abuse situation, apart from it was an abuse of power. The reason I looked up is because I had read a feminist's book. I believe it was Gail Dines' book, which is very anti-pornography. And she was describing the porn that was coming up on as she logged on. And that's what I was expecting when I logged on. But with a completely fresh IP address, that wasn't what was there.
Yeah, so I did an experiment ahead of making this programme where I visited one of the tube sites that I've not visited before. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I've not visited any. I
sure,
have.
Yeah.
But I'd not visited this one. And I set up some scientific conditions. Mm-hmm. So I deleted all cookies. Mm-hmm. I went in private browsing. So anything the internet might know about my proclivities would be unknown to this site. And I also didn't find titles as upsetting as that. I find some of it quite funny. One was a beautiful stranger from Paris lets me taste her croissant.
So, you know, there's something for everyone.
There's something for everyone. But there were also titles suggestive of abusive power dynamics, not of the kind as egregious as those samples in the petition, but that I would imagine if you clicked on it, it would only take a couple of clicks before you were looking at titles like that and perhaps heading down that rabbit warren. So this stuff does exist. It is easy to reach for people.
Yes, this isn't dark web. It's
no,
yeah.
No. So we were sort of talking about, you know, if we can see that there are things there that are wholly undesirable, what is the solution?
What is the solution? Well, being uptight doesn't help anyone, and being ashamed doesn't help anyone, and being patronising doesn't help anyone who makes pornography. So I think if you're a consumer, if you're someone who watches porn, take more interest in it, not less. Don't feel like, oh God, the whole world's telling me off. I just, you know, it's a stress reliever. It's just this, or I just need to, you know, let something out every so often. You've done nothing wrong. Be interested by what arouses you, and then make sure you've done some due diligence. Mm. And then to come all the way back to the beginning in terms of how we talk to children, it's not about telling them the names of sex acts. It's about telling them that adults pretend to do things to turn on other adults, and it's really complicated. And when they're older, they can come to you with any questions, but it's so that their first experience isn't terrifying. You know, I've got an 18-month-old, so I'm several years behind, and I'm so far away from it that I understand that you want them to have this long childhood before they have to absorb these things. But parents can't be expected to sit down. Come on, kids, gather around. Like millions of people every day, we're going to watch some you porn and then we're going to discuss it as a family. But if someone doesn't do that, we're leaving a lot up to chance in terms of how they understand things.
So, yeah, I suppose we're probably not going to do that, but there's some middle ground where we're open to those conversations.
And they don't get built-in shame or fear at a really early age and then be incredibly secretive forever. That feels like such a lonely burden. God, the idea that they're walking around absolutely miserable about it is so heartbreaking, isn't it? So I think it has to be really people-centred. The porn titles are scary, but we really like people, and people have done nothing wrong, most of them.
Sarah Pascoe, thank you so much for talking to me
thank
about
you.
Pornography.